Hello, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me. I am your host, Sammy Sattva. You're listening to Stories on the Palate, a lifestyle show where we talk about food and beverage and wine and entertainment. And this episode is going to be all about best tips for your winery website. If you don't know who I am, a little bit about me, I am a branding expert and have been in the food and beverage, entertainment, and lifestyle industries for 20 years now. So I've lived all over the West Coast. I'm from Scottsdale, Arizona, but I currently live in Portland, Oregon, and absolutely loving it. Often make it down to the wine country. It's a very emerging region for wine. So let's get into it. So today is March 19th. 2020, and it's a really pivotal time for all of us because we're in the midst of this coronavirus situation where a lot of us don't have jobs, we lost clients, my connections have closed down their tasting rooms, restaurants, shops, stores, everything. I mean, we're approaching that complete shut down. And it very well may get to that point before this podcast is released, but I'm gonna try to get it out as soon as possible. So as of right now, while I'm recording on the 19th, we're not in complete shutdown, but we're approaching it. So I want to talk about this list because it brings us to our online presence. And that's primarily what I want to talk about right now, because as I was making this list, I found I had so many ideas and tips that I could share with you all of how to create a successful website for your winery. But before we get into that, I would like to start every episode with what's in my glass. And I know that there hasn't been a whole lot of previous episodes, and I'm gonna tell you why really quick. Because I've recorded and edited 3 other episodes over the course of the past 2 months. Maybe a little over a month. And all of them have become irrelevant based on our current economic situation. And it has been such a waste, but it's been fun recording, all to have it go nowhere, but it's fine. So I'm technically on my 5th episode, but right now we're technically on the 1st. So anyway, I'm gonna get into what I'm drinking right now. And I am drinking, Bodecker Cellars. They're a Portland urban winery. And I'm drinking the 2015 Gigi, which is a blend, a lovely blend of Gewurztraminer and Pinot Gris. It's 68% Pinot Gris and 32% Gewurztraminer, and it is so delicious. And it's playful but spicy and not too sweet for my palate, which I absolutely love. So definitely check them out. I absolutely love that brand. They're a huge Pinot house in Northwest Portland, which is super tasty. Thank you, Bodecker. Okay, so back to this website. Okay, so if you follow me on Instagram or are my friend on Facebook, you would have seen me release my massive directory today all across my channels. And I've been working on it for the past week because I randomly have a bunch of time on my hands. but it was really fun to make, and it features, I want to say 100, but maybe it's not quite that large, but it's a pretty extensive list of Portland urban wineries to Newburgh wineries all the way down to Salem, and then even across over into the Yamhill Carlton, into the coastal region, Chehalem Mountains and whatnot. So it's a pretty extensive list. I didn't quite get to Southern Oregon wines yet, as much as I would love to feature a ton of the wineries down there. I need to either make that a part 2 or just get back to it. But if you're interested, it's specifically featuring wines that are $30 and under. And I curated most of it, but a lot of wineries actually submitted their wines, which I thought was really cool. And a couple of them even donated a couple of bottles, which I was super thrilled about because obviously I'm not making any money off this and I just put my time towards. And I'm always thankful to get wine as payment on small things like that. If you're wondering why I chose $30, I'll tell you why. Because it might seem like a low number to you, but when it comes to younger generations, 20s, 30s, even, you know, maybe young 40s, depending on what kind of jobs, you know, these people have, I don't have a whole lot of people in my network that will spend over $40 per bottle. I know people who will buy cases, but, you know, when it comes to single bottles or a few bottles at a time, I just have seen people generally stick to $40 or under, and they generally prefer, based on statistics that I've pulled in my network, they prefer single bottles over cases or packs. And that single bottle could be up to three or four, but not quite a case. So that's just what is in my network. And so I started thinking, what can I do to give a whole list, a consolidated comprehensive list in one place that features some of my favorite wineries here and also super boutique wineries that are featuring lower cost affordable wines. So I compiled this list and I even sectioned it off by region. So there's all the way from Hood River, you can click on PDX Urban, you can click on, I actually kind of separated them kind of by AVA. So it might not necessarily say like Newburgh, right? It's gonna say something like Chehalem Mountains, and people will either get it or they don't, but that's fine. I figured I just create it that way, and people will either catch on or they'll learn. As I was going through all of these websites and curating this massive list, I got to see a variety of how people execute showing their wines online. And I'm not new to websites, right? Like, I'm actually a web designer, and I have been designing since 2004. So this is not new to me, but I don't think I've ever done any sort of experiment where I've bulk curated a bunch of links, as many links as I did in one sitting over the course of a couple of days, of course. But like, I just haven't done that much curation in multiple consecutive days. So I really got to see a wide range of how people are showing their online space for their wines. And like, I can probably attest to wines not really being a huge place for online shopping. It's just people would rather, I'll back up a little bit. Unless the person, the consumer, has been to the tasting room already and has experienced the vineyard, the winery, or an event or anything of that nature, then I can see maybe that person potentially buying wine from that winery online. But even then, I've just noticed that people in the wine industry just tend to go back to the winery, buy the wines direct, or they're part of a wine club and get wines delivered to them, or they pick them up. So it's an interesting thing to witness right now, everyone shifting to online. And it's not new to me. Again, I run a creative agency. Half of what we do is digital content creation and designing. And so I've noticed an influx. People who are not normally online and navigating content creation or going live on social medias are now shifting to online. And it's like everyone's trying to just fill their time with productive things to do so that we all don't go insane, right? But I'm also noticing a bunch of errors and like 101 mistakes that are really hurting some of these people. And I'm not gonna name any names, but if you're on my list of that directory and you might want some sort of analysis on or feedback on if you were one of those people that I thought had some errors, please reach out to me. I'm happy to give you a free analysis of what I thought or any just sort of general feedback that is helpful and can be constructive. And I'm not gonna charge you for that. But I kinda wanna go down the list of some of the things that are like really detrimental that I even kinda turned away from. My absolute number one is have a clear direction for how people can buy your wine. no-brainer, right? Marketing 101, website 101, online shop 101. If people don't know how to buy, you're gonna make it really difficult for them to navigate your website. And you have to make it easy for people to buy from you. You have to make it easy for people to give you money. I say that all the time in business. If you don't have payment gateways, or if you don't have, you know, a properly optimized headers and footers and menus and navigation and things like that, people are going to exit out. That is absolute number one. I came across some websites that were so deeply rooted before I could even get to their online shop. I mean, I'm talking, I had to click into three different pages just to learn how I could buy from them. And that is absolutely unacceptable. And it's 2020. There's no reason why you shouldn't have an optimized online shop. There's a lot of DIY tips online that you can search, or you can hire a professional. So don't make it difficult for people to buy from you, number one. The other main thing is I saw so many websites who didn't have direction in terms of like how they can buy from you. Okay, so let's just say that their online shop wasn't available, whether it was like coming soon or just wasn't available. I didn't know how to even buy from them. I was like, okay, I literally had to click out. So those people were not featured. And I'm just sitting here thinking like, man, like, I don't know how to get to your online shop. Like, it's too confusing. And if it's too confusing for me as someone who's a professional in this industry who knows how to navigate easily, it's definitely going to be easy for, you know, Simple Jane, who is maybe new to online ordering, and, or someone who's older, or even honestly, even someone who's a millennial and who is just like, what the heck? Because their expectations are higher. So fix that. If you have that going on, you need some tips, do a Google search or just reach out. The other one that I was kind of like mind boggled about was that there are tons of spelling errors in the tasting notes. And I'm just thinking, that's not cool. There's plenty of tools that you can install on your computer, such as Grammarly, which is a free extension, and it identifies any sort of spelling error or even grammatical error, and also identifies where the spelling mistake is. And so when I was transferring some of these tasting notes over into the directory, because that's a lot of what I was doing, I was just going to the links, looking at the price, grabbing the direct URL, grabbing the price, grabbing their tasting notes. When I transfer them into my blog, I had to make a lot of spelling changes. And I was just like, this is interesting to me. Like, how and why and what in the world? But I get it. Take the time, comb through your website. Trust me, I make some spelling errors too. That's why I have proofreaders. But we just can't let the simple things, such as your tasting notes, be misconstrued by several spelling errors. That segues into my next point, is that some of y'all didn't have any tasting notes. And it's not even just tasting notes. There was nothing about the wine. Like, no viticulture information, no winemaker information, no wine notes, just the name, its price, and its varietal, and that was it. And I thought that was kind of like uninviting, because when people are buying from you, unless they know what that wine tastes like, they may or may not buy from you based on what you haven't shown them. And I understand that tasting notes are highly subjective, but that doesn't mean that you can't still guide someone into what they might expect. And that means including information about possibly the vintage year and what that weather was like, or your brand, and what the team thought about it, or what kind of winemaking process did you guys use for that specific wine. So many things that you can add that don't necessarily relate to specifically creating tasting notes for someone, because I understand that that's sometimes people leave, wine brands leave that up to the consumer, and I completely understand. However, when it's just completely blank, it's like, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to taste. I don't know even, maybe they don't even know what the varietal is, because if it's a, you know, an interesting, like a Gewurztraminer, because that's not, it's common, but a lot of the general population doesn't know what that is, right? And I'm not saying that's just the wine I'm talking about and that didn't have tasting notes. I saw some for even Pinot, which is kind of blasphemy. What I'm saying overall, you gotta give your viewers something to read and something to share and to be excited about and to create a picture within their mind. The last thing I wanna say is this is a huge wine, and I am almost tempted to say this is number one, but I'm just gonna say I'm gonna leave the best for last, and that is 100%. Do not make your wine shop private. I'm gonna say that one more time. Do not make your wine shop private. That is a huge what the hell. I understand you want it to be kind of exclusive, and even then, maybe segregate that a little bit and create a wine club. That's what that whole concept is for. If there are any of you out there who have a private wine shop and you have to maybe sign up or give email addresses or anything of that sort just to view the wines, you will not ever get any online sales based on that. And because of that reason, I didn't actually feature that person. And it was just kind of mind-boggling to me that people do that. It was very uninviting. Even as someone who, you know, doesn't mind signing up to wine newsletters and whatnot, there's a lot of people out there that don't like to sign up to newsletters that they don't know what they're getting into. You want to make your entire website, your shop, you want it to be all inviting. You want it to be inclusive, unless it's a wine club. That's a completely different story, and that whole concept is meant to be exclusive, and people know that. So I'm moving on. I have another big one. These are all big. These are all so big. They're all so important because this is consumer psychology, y'all. These are all things that when customers land on your website, they have a certain expectation, and if they don't get it, they're gonna be turned off. Okay, this is not just me and my opinions. These are actual statistics and feedback that I get on a regular basis from being a content creator and a website developer. The other one that I'm just like, I don't understand, is when the prices are not shown in the whole list. And, you know, there's like a masonry format view where there's just rows and rows and rows and rows of your wine, which is cool. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But have your prices and the information quickly available without having to deeply connect further into your website just to find the price. And I understand the psychology behind that, and maybe it's like, oh, well, I want them to learn more about it instead of browsing by price. But the reality is that people sometimes browse by price. There's no way you can get around that. That is reality. And you have to make it easier for people to find what they want. And so when I came across several, might I add, several websites that didn't display their prices when viewing the wine, I immediately was overwhelmed, but great. Now I'm gonna have to work even harder to find what I'm looking for. And you can't do that to your consumers. Or maybe they're not even a consumer of yours yet and they're just a potential audience, but you are at high risk of losing that audience, whoever they are, if you don't have your prices listed. So I highly recommend going into your e-commerce shop and fixing those settings to display the price or enable what you call a quick view. Because a quick view allows you to like either hover over the product and it'll show some of the like the most basic information, the title, maybe a rating, definitely the price, and maybe a super quick description. But all of those should be available with whatever e-commerce platform you're using. Okay, so this one is truly the last one that I want to talk about. And it's kind of a positive. It's not necessarily anything that you're doing wrong. But something to think about is if you have something out of stock, keep it live. Okay, keep that listing live and say, hey, we own this varietal, but it's currently not in stock. Then take it a step further and give them an option to sign up to your newsletter to be notified when it's going to be back in stock. And it's like, boom, you now are starting to collect or even increase those collections and those lead generations of potential wine buyers. And then you now have this beautiful additional opportunity to communicate via email marketing with them about potentially when this wine that they signed up for is going to be released and maybe some other really cool behind the scenes tips that you can share with them, get them excited about it, give them kind of a little bit of a FOMO experience, and then definitely get them engaged. But that is something super easy that you can integrate on your website. And it may not be available on each page of the actual product listing, but you can have it in your footer as like a MailChimp or whatever, Constant Contact or whatever other email marketing platform that you use, you can integrate it to show up on every single page. That does exist. I think that would be such a perfect opportunity because I see so many shops, not just wine, I'm seeing retail shops completely disable these listings, these products that they no longer have in stock. And I'm just like, why? It gives you an opportunity to show these people, whether they're your potential buyers or they're already your buyers, that you have this and we're going to get it in stock. Keep an eye out for when we restock it. Of course, unless you don't plan to restock it, or even if, let's say you're a winery and you sold out of the rosé, which happens every single year in a lot of cases. Even if that happens, you should still keep it on your website to show that you offer that varietal. Otherwise, they're gonna be like, oh, I didn't even see that you had that varietal. That's usually the case with new customers. But you still have to show those new customers and those potential customers that you have this varietal, it's just not in stock, and you'll let them know when it's gonna get back in stock. And I think that is super easy to integrate. Anybody can do that. All right, everyone, that concludes my list. I just wanted to jump on here and give a little bit of light to that directory that I just created because it is so money. I'm wondering if it could potentially be some sort of evergreen piece of content. And I know that the prices might change, but I'm toying with the idea of continuously adding to it and then also maybe updating it here and there. And I don't know, I'm thinking that it just depends on if people love it. I mean, I know people are loving it so far. Like, I've gotten more than a few handfuls of people reach out to me and say, wow, like, this is great. And then also I have like a little sign up form at the end of that directory saying, if you're a winery and you want to submit your wine, please message me. And I've even gotten a handful of submissions from that. So I know it's getting into the hands of the right people. So I don't know where that's going to lead, but I think it could go somewhere. If any of you who are on that list and are listening and you want to send me a bottle as a thank you, I will be so happy, super happy to receive that. And then I might even put it into our next podcast as the wine that I'm drinking for the episode. But as always, you can find me on Instagram. That is where I am most active, on stories and IGTV and the post. That is at Sammy Sattva, SammySattva. And of course, you can find the Daydream Agency and Stories on the Palette. These are both new Instagrams, so they're not gonna have a whole lot of posts created, but still follow us, give us some love, subscribe to this channel. I'm gonna try and put out new episodes at least once every couple of weeks, and it's going to be all about food and beverage. So stay tuned for another episode, and don't forget to say hello when you follow me. Cheers, y'all. Have a good night.